This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Welcome to the Hockey News Podcast. I'm writer-editor Matt Larkin. I'm here with senior writer Ken Campbell. We're very pleased to be joined tonight from the USA Today by a fantastic writer, Mr. Kevin Allen. Thanks a lot for joining us, Kevin. We're here at the Air Canada Centre, and we just witnessed, I don't want to say a close hockey game, I'll call it a competitive hockey game between Canada and USA, a 4-2 final. First off, you know, there's a lot of criticism about Dean Lombardi's assembling of this team, about Coach John Tortorella's lineup decisions. We'll start with you, Kevin. What do you think about what this Team USA has done so far in the tournament, and is it time for sort of a state of the union? Because at the highest level of best on best, it seems that Team USA is repetitively struggling.
Well, I think it's certainly time for that, and I think there will be sort of a review of what happened here, and I think there'll be plenty of blame to go around. I think it's fair to second guess some of the roster decisions, particularly when you look at the fact that they added guys who are known more for mucking and grinding than skill, and this is a best-on-best tournament. So I think it's fair to wonder why there's no Tyler Johnson or Justin Falk, who had, 16 goals. But I think, to me, the biggest thing that's being overlooked is I'm just not sure this group of American players is good enough. If you do a little exercise and compare the top players on each country, the top six or seven players, you get down to America's, you pass Kane and Pavelski, you say, who's number three? Like, it's hard to figure out who the top seven or eight players are, and it's pretty clear in most countries. And I think that's the difference between USA and the other countries. They have a lot of quality players, a little short on superstars.
Yeah, I think you bring up some good points, Kevin. And I mean, you can talk about the roster and the decisions all you want, but Patrick Kane hasn't scored a goal in a best-on-best tournament in 9 games now. So, I mean, they can't make him score goals. I mean, he's got to do that himself. However, that being said, I think that there's a lot of reason to question those roster decisions. I think that USA Hockey picked the wrong management team, which picked the wrong coach, which picked a lot of the wrong players for this tournament. This is a tournament. This is not the NHL season. This is not an 82 muck and grind situation where you have to, be a kind of a muck and grinding team that survives. You have to be fast, you have to be smart, and you have to be offensive. And Kevin alluded to some of the picks that were not made. I think that there's got to be some full-scale changes at USA Hockey, and it starts right at the top. I mean, USA Hockey has some very brilliant minds out there right now. People like Bill Guerin, in my opinion. Chris Chelios, Doug Waite, Mike Richter. Like, I think it's time to move out the Brian Burkes and the Dean Lombardis, not because they're not good hockey men. They are good hockey men, but I think their philosophy on how to build a team is antiquated. And I think those guys have to be moved out, and I think it's time to bring in some of these younger guys, like the Guerins and that, and see what they can do. Because this is a group that has a lot of good young players coming up, and I think those players deserve the best chance to try and put together the best teams. And I think it just needs a new approach, and I think that's what has to happen at USA Hockey right now.
And it's interesting, Team USA, this is a team that I think at this point, it's beyond excuses when you leave Justin Falk home, when you leave Kevin Shattenkirk home, when you leave Phil Kessel home. But at the same time, I think we probably would agree no team, I guess there's only two teams to discuss here, but USA was far more affected by the tournament format than Canada, because a lot of Team North America studs absolutely would have made USA's roster. You see Zach Parise out there on the top power play unit, and Parise was a great player 6 years ago. He was fantastic in Vancouver in 2010. He might have been the best player on the ice for the Americans in 2010. Now he's in his early 30s. He's got back problems. Reminds me of myself. I'm in my early 30s. I have back problems. I'm not out there on the first power play unit. But you'd see Johnny Gaudreau out there. You'd see Jack Eichel maybe with his speed. Maybe even Dylan Larkin. Maybe even Austin Matthews. So I do think that the U.S. a little bit hurt by the format.
Well, there's no question. And I think most of those players would have been on the varsity instead of the junior varsity. They may not have taken Austin Matthews because he hadn't played a game in the NHL, but when you watch him play, he deserves to be there. And, there's a hole in the U.S. program. The USA's best center is a right wing with his team. And Joe Pavelski is having to play center. The Ryan Kessler, they're just not good enough down the middle. I mean, think back to when they were successful in the days when you had Madonna and Dougie Waite and Pat LaFontaine and Jeremy Roenick. And just for fun, Joel Otto to win faceoffs. They're not anywhere near that. But guess what? They will be. Because I say in 2018, they'll have Matthews, Eichel, and I think Dylan Larkin will be the fourth center. I think one of these guys, Tyler Johnson, or, you know, Kessler will still be around. But I think it will look different, and I think they are going to be open to bringing in guys like Bill Guerin and Chris Chelios. You're already starting to hear that rumbling, too, that there's going to be there. So I think there'll be some changes, but I think win, lose, or draw at this tournament, everybody knew that this was the last hurrah for this group, that they were already projecting and planning that these young players are coming in.
Yeah, I mean, Dylan Larkin's got to start playing center with his club team before he starts playing at international level. But Matt,
I think he will this year.
Yeah, I think he will too. But Matt, I'm not buying it. I'm not buying this notion that they would have been better with these kids. I mean, if you're counting on these young kids to carry you through a tournament like this and best on best, I think they might have been a little bit better. I don't know they would have been that much better with these younger guys on the team. I don't think a Jack Eichel is going to make that much of a difference. Might have made a difference in the offensive zone. The other three zones, he would have struggled. Johnny Gaudreau might have really been good on the power play. He would have been overmatched against Canada in this game in the defensive zone. Okay, so I'm not buying that one. And I just think that this team was flawed. It was flawed from the top down, and it started with the coach, and it went through the lineup. And you're right about down the middle. They were brutal down the middle, and I've never seen a team be successful either in a long-term NHL season or in a short-term tournament like the Olympics or this one if you don't have strength down the middle.
You know, switching to Canada now, it's hard to find any new superlatives to describe this team. But can you get creative for me? Can you think of something that surprised you or something that has impressed you that you didn't expect to impress you so far? What do you think, guys?
Yeah, I don't see anything. You know, what I love about Canada from the American perspective is sort of the tribal approach that they have. Like, it's just sort of handed down word of mouth through the years, and it doesn't seem to matter who's on the roster.
Right.
Now, saying all that, I mean, this group here with Crosby and Taves and Bergeron, and so forth. I mean, this is pretty darn impressive. And, you know, they've got the goaltending as well. And, it's just so fun to watch. Like, I love coming to these tournaments just to watch Canada because, you know, they're always going to be ready. And now they've got the perfect coach. Like, Babcock is the perfect international coach because of his level of preparation. You know, he just works at getting a team ready. And now they've got everything. And they're just amazing to watch, and there's just nothing new about them. This is an old story, but it's an entertaining story.
You know, Matt, I've said this before. Canada is a superstar team with a grunt mentality. You know, I mean, what did we hear in the first couple of games with Russia? You know, Alex Ovechkin's not getting out enough. You know, they're star players. You know, these guys are used to Datsyuk. You know, in the NHL, these guys are used to getting 20 minutes a game. They're used to being on the ice a lot. How is it going to affect these guys? How are they going to, you know, what's their attitude going to be like? Why is the coach doing this? How much ice time did Joe Thornton have tonight? You tracked it.
11 minutes and 37 seconds.
Joe Thornton, who's going to be in the Hall of Fame, has 1,000 assists. Got 11 minutes and 37 seconds, and nobody says anything.
And as a fourth line, he's the
fourth
line center.
And nobody cares, And guess what? Joe Thornton doesn't care either. Because none of these guys, when they come in here, are worried about any of that. They take their ego, they check it at the door, and Mike Babcock tells them, you're going to play on the fourth line, we're going to give you a few minutes, we may get you out on the power play once in a while, and we want you to just be a good soldier, and they say, darn right. I remember it went right back to Eric Lindros in 1991. He said, he had like this great line. He said, I'll do anything for this team. I'll drive the bus. I'll be the bus driver if I have to. And that's what they get buy-in from all these guys. Whereas in Russia, they're saying, oh man, Alex Ovechkin only got 6 minutes of ice time in this period. Boy, is he ever going to be pissed off. Well, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen in Canada.
Interesting. And it's been fun. I found it especially fun to see Joe Thornton sort of earn his way back into this Canada culture because he didn't make the team in Sochi 2014, back on an NHL-sized ice, suddenly makes the team after a great year. And I think there's an adjustment. I spoke to Ryan O'Reilly tonight, and he kept mentioning puck possession. So I do think, you know, we're seeing analytics come back into the mainstream consciousness, and maybe Canadian brass had it in mind because suddenly Joe Thornton is being respected enough, even as he gets older, to be put back onto this team. I thought that was very interesting.
Well, yeah. He was rediscovered last season. Like, there was a drum beat, a lot of talk about he should have been on the Selke. Mm-hmm. Analytics played a role in that as well. And I got to say, the best thing that happened to Joe in terms of his reputation as Peter DeBoer. Like, Peter DeBoer worked at letting people know, I got to San Jose, and guess what? All this criticism about Joe, it was unwarranted. Now, I had actually said for years, like, he was never the problem in San Jose. Right. He was always part of the solution.
Right.
They wanted to blame somebody. He was big. He was an easy target.
Right.
Yeah. But he was never to blame. He was always part of the solution. Very popular in the room. Guys really love him. The fact he lost his captaincy had more to do with his friction with Doug Wilson than anything else. Just because the team didn't play all that well, someone had to pay a price, and it was him. But, he's been this kind of player for years, but it's fun to see that Canada has rediscovered his value.
Yeah, and I mean, Joe Thornton, the guy who's, we talk about possession, but he's the guy that wants to give the puck away more than anybody else.
That's ironic.
People, right? It's kind of ironic. Like, even that, who was it, Brent Burns said the other night when he scored, when he got that goal, he said, I thought he was going to pass it back. I thought for sure he was going to pass it back. And he says, I think he did try to pass it back, and it just went in the net.
He's actually suffered his reputation with the fact that he's a playmaker because he's so big. Like, when you're that big, we want you to score 30 goals.
Right.
And
right.
So when he never scored 30 goals, people started to get down on him, but he was such a great passer. We just failed to notice that.
Very well said. A parting thought from both of you. Is there any team out there in the field right now that should scare Canada, that has a chance against Canada? Is it Sweden? Is it North America? What do you guys think?
I don't think there is. I said before the tournament that I thought Canada was going to win this tournament going away. I still believe that. I haven't seen anything that leads me to believe anything otherwise. I think it's going to be a two-game final. I think Canada's going to win them both, and it'll likely be against Sweden. And, I mean, I look back to Sochi in 2014. Sweden had a really good team. They had the same, they had the same defense, and they were terrific. I mean, I know they didn't have Nicholas Backstrom in the overtime or in the gold medal game, but, I mean, guys, they could still be playing right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if Sweden would have a goal.
Right.
I mean, Canada's, they're locked in. They're locked in. They're locked down. They're not giving up anything. Like, they gave up two tonight, which is,
well, they scored one of them themselves.
Yeah, and Joe's own goal on one of those. I don't see it. I see Sweden maybe, making a run at it, but in the end, this is Canada's tournament to lose, and I think it's been that way since the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm with Ken. I had Canada all the way, and I've seen nothing as well. The only caveat would be for me is we know Lundqvist. Like, he's capable of putting up a 42 save shutout. You got to be careful with him. But, Sweden's offense isn't good enough. I like their defense.
It sure wasn't today.
I love their talent on defense. It's so fun to watch that group with, Carlson and Hedman and Ekman Larson. And I love Stroman. I think Stroman is still underrated, even though we talk about him a lot. their offense isn't good. Sedins can still play, but once you get beyond that, there's a drop-off. So.
I agree. Philip Forsberg is the closest they have to, that big sniper, but it's not like he's a 50-goal guy. And I pointed out today to the coach, Rickard Gromborg, Sweden's got 4 goals in 2 games. One was scored by Victor Hedman. One was scored by Anton Stroman. One was an empty netter by Louis Eriksson. So we've got a power play goal by Gabriel Landeskog, and that's it from your forwards from Sweden. So I do agree that I think the offense from up front is going to be an Achilles heel for Sweden if they end up meeting Canada.
You got to get through that defense. Yeah, good luck with that. And then if you do, of course you got Carey Price.
Yeah, that's right.
Canada.
That's right. Okay, well, I think it's pretty unanimous. The Canada has cruised so far. We expect them to keep cruising. Kevin, thanks so much for coming on with us.
My pleasure.
Absolute pleasure.
It's always good to have. It's always nice to have a Hall of Famer on the podcast, isn't it?
That's right. It legitimizes us. I think it really does. Yeah. It's a watershed moment for this
young
podcast.
There's a Hall of Famer on this podcast, and we're joined by Kevin Allen and Ken Campbell.
Wait, are you saying I'm a Hall of Famer?
That's what I'm saying.
All right.
That's the joke. That's the
all
joke.
All right. Man. Okay, I'm young. Well, I'm not that young. Thanks, fellas.
Thank you.
Thank you.